Welcome back to Owned and Operated, where we dive deep into the businesses we own, the businesses we are acquiring, and we also bring on guests to talk about their operating struggles. If you like what you hear today, follow John and Brandon on Twitter. That's John at Wilson Companies and Brandon at Brandon Nyro. Also, check out our weekly newsletter, where we teach you how to be an effective operator. You can sign up by clicking the link in the description of this podcast or by visiting ownedandoperated.com. That's ownedandoperated.com. Check it out.
Cassie Niekamp will be joining us for today's podcast. 7 months ago, she bought a fencing company called Bowden Fencing based in Columbus, Ohio. We'll be looking into all of the details of this acquisition and how it's gone so far. Bowden is 3 years old and had done roughly $750,000 in revenue prior to Cassie coming in. Since then, she's hired more employees and worked towards helping them to build up the company's future. She'll break down topics such as how to market a fencing company, how she fills positions, and how they've been dealing with the huge and overwhelming demand they're facing. Enjoy.
If you listen to our show, you know that we can spend months sourcing businesses, talking with them, negotiating LOIs, conducting due diligence, all for a deal to fall through at the finish line. MicroAcquire solves that whole problem, whether you're buying or selling a business. As a seller, you're getting introduced to over 50,000 trusted buyers with total anonymity. As a buyer, you get to sort through profitable, vetted sellers and close in 30 days. We don't own any digital businesses yet, but over the next year, we're intending to grab a couple, and MicroAcquire is going to be our choice for a sourcing platform.
Welcome back to Owned and Operated. Today, we have Cassie Niekamp on with us today. Welcome, Cassie.
Thank you.
Cassie and I we were ships passing in the night a few months ago at the Akron Small Business Meetup. You came all the way up here from Columbus and we didn't get a chance to meet, but we connected a few weeks later. And your story was pretty cool. You bought a fencing company and that's most of what I know. So how about you fill us in with about a 60-second primer into what you're all about?
Sure. So we are 7 months into a fence company acquisition. They had done roughly about $750,000 in revenue over the past 3 years. There was a little bit of variance there, but that was pretty average. And we have a crew of 12 employees.
That's pretty good. What did you do prior to taking over the fencing company?
Prior, I was involved with two different startups. One was a digital marketing startup out of Ohio. We grew from almost nothing to, by the time I left, they were about $20-25 million. And revenue, and I was overseeing some sales teams there. And then I moved to another startup out of Chicago called Cultivate Advisors. They're a small business consulting company, and I was doing recruiting and sales for them.
Okay. So I feel like I know the name of the digital marketing startup out of Columbus.
Yeah.
So you were leading sales teams for both, right? Or you were in some version of sales in both?
That's right. Yes. Leading sales team for the company's name is Rev Local out of Granville, Ohio. They're a great company. I actually full circle just hired them on for some marketing services for us, which was
cool.
Fun. And then Cultivate was just awesome. It was just a great group of people, super, super intelligent group of people. And I helped them initially in sales and then moved into their head of recruiting, which I did for about 2 years. And so I had a really fun job of convincing people to come on board with Cultivate. And oftentimes it came with a, you know, pretty significant pay decrease to start before ramping up. So I honed my recruiting skills.
Yeah. So what did Cultivate do? Like, what was I get the digital marketing stuff,
yeah.
But what does Cultivate do? What's the offer?
Their core business is to hire former entrepreneurs and teach current entrepreneurs how to grow and scale their business. So they were totally industry agnostic and they specialize between about 1 million to 10 million in revenue. And as another full circle event, I use them as well. So my advisor, my advisor Simone is one of my best friends and she is just phenomenal at really pulling me out of the business and helping me financial forecast. You know, I think that financials is a strength of my husband's. It is not always a strength of mine. So she's just been phenomenal.
That is really interesting. I have never heard of, usually when I've run into advisors like that, it's one-offs, but this really these guys really professionalized it. How many advisors were there, like ex-entrepreneurs?
So when I started, I was ground level when I started about 4 years ago with them. The CEO was a personal friend that I connected with in Chicago. He's a great guy, Casey Clark. They're up to over 100, I think, right now. And when I left, we were about 70-ish, but they're close to 10 million in revenue. So they're killing it. They're crushing it. And they host a really great small business conference every year, which for the past couple of years has been virtual. And I can't wait to get back in person with them. And they worked across North America, US and Canada.
So I'm just interested in general. This isn't like, this isn't a paid promotion, folks. I'm just interested. So what does the typical engagement look like? So I call up Cultivate.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
I need help. How does it work?
There's a free consultation where they kind of see, hey, what are your major issues? Well, rather, what are your main goals? Let's start there. What issues to growth or constraints to growth have you been having? And then we really decide, is this a great partnership? Is this something we can help you dive into? Is it not? And, you know, 9/10 of a lot of the challenges in business are just either people or processes. And so if we can help you either hire, retain your folks, or come up with some really great processes around finance, operations, marketing, sales, the rest of the pieces really fall into place. But I just find it, you know, it's the same thing of having a counselor or a therapist personally, having somebody removed from your business who can shed that insight, I think is just worth its weight in gold. I would highly suggest them at a moment's notice, but really just outside consulting as a whole is just so beneficial, I think.
Yeah, we've had a variety of different things that look like that. We had a business coach sort of early on, and that sounds a little bit like what this is. Ex-entrepreneur built his business, sold it. We had a larger strategic coach. That really wasn't the title, but that's what, I don't know how else to describe it. And then right now we're dealing with outside folks to help us implement some cultural stuff. But I do totally agree with you. It helps a lot, helps you level up. And that's a cool thing for ex-entrepreneurs too, because half the time they don't know what to do.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And it's such a, you know, I think there's such credibility when you say, hey, I remember what that felt like to fire my first employee and that sucked. And, you know, this is how you're going to navigate through it. And there's such an emotional play in business as well, you know, as much as sometimes we don't want to acknowledge that.
Yeah, that's absolutely emotional. Okay. So 7 months in, we'll dive to you. Sorry. that was interesting. So 7 months into the fence company, used to do 750,000 in sales, 12 employees. Did it always have 12 employees, or is that a new number for you guys?
When we took it over, I think there were 9 or 10, and we've added about 2 to 3 more roles to the business. By the end of this month, we'll actually have a total of 12. I'm getting ready to hire an individual and installation coordinator that's going to take a lot off of my plate, which I'm really excited about. Some admin stuff that I can have some help with. But yeah, we have an inside sales role that's new, and the installation coordinator role that's new.
Can you walk me through the org chart like right now today, or including the coordinator?
I sure can. So before we came on board, I felt like there was a heavy separation between office and field. And in our business, you know, the most important team members are the field. You know, they're so amazing. They're so dynamic. They're just awesome guys. But we have two crews of 3 individuals that run out in our field to do fencing installs. We do every sort of fencing, gate installation, gate operators, et cetera. And we have one gentleman who is head of our shop. So we have a full-time welder who pulls jobs, stages, is in charge of materials, and also welds like our custom gates and that sort of thing. Believe it or not, there's a lot of fabrication and fencing, specifically with our commercial clients and some of those sorts of things. So that is kind of the field and customer facing team. Our sales team is comprised of myself. I do still a little bit of quoting, selling to our commercial clients. We have an inside sales person who does a lot of like fence drawings for major contractors, schools, property management companies, people who would have drawings and plans. He does a lot of that. We also do a decent amount of do-it-yourself sales. So people who want to install their own fences or contractors who want to install their own fencing. So we have him inside sales. I have an office manager and I have a installation coordinator who is getting ready to come on board, and an outside sales person as well, who's getting ready to come on board. He's a replacement. We're backfilling for him.
Got it. So when you're thinking about like 10 to 12, that's like that's a tight team. So when you're mm-hmm. thinking about these new roles, mm-hmm. how are you thinking about like, I don't know, when I'm thinking about hiring someone, it's because usually there's so much work. It's a full-time job to split this off. But I would imagine at your size, it's mainly like, hey, we want to grow here. So how are you choosing to make these investments in these salespeople and install coordinators?
Yeah. So I think when you're recruiting, you look at it through two lenses. One is constraint. Like you're saying, there's so much work to be done. I need additional help with that. The next thing is opportunity. When I think about our installation coordinator, it's one of opportunity. So in fencing, you wouldn't believe it, but the average investment is between, let's say, $5,000 to $25,000 in terms of a residential fence. It is a monumental moment for people when their fence installation happens. And so her role is really to provide more white glove service to our customer service touch points, like drip email campaigns, phone calls, that sort of thing. It's kind of like a wedding. Like it's a heightened thing. And with COVID, sure. Everybody's home, they're nitpicking their interior and exterior of their home. And so for her, although it'll be helping me from a constraint perspective, it's also a huge opportunity to get very dialed into our customer service metrics, you know, just more touch points, better service, all of those good things.
On the residential side only, or is she doing commercial as well?
She'll be doing commercial as well, but commercial is just, you know, you and I have talked about this kind of previously, sure. But it's a different beast. You know, commercial is so, I don't want to say laid back, but in a sense, yes. I mean, until it comes to security, if there's a security breach on a property and it's just, I needed it yesterday, that's when things can get a little finicky there. But where we come into more like persnickety, hey, I want this changed, or hey, I have this, you know, kind of thing. Residential is a totally different animal. So where her skills and opportunity exist to really dial up this role will be residential, I believe.
Okay. So in hiring this role, it's one of opportunity. You're going to provide better service. I totally get all of that. Do you think it's going to provide greater sales, increased margin? Like outside of just like a better experience, do you see a change in P&L?
Long-term, I believe so with our level of service. You know, I think that customer service today is the new marketing. And that's kind of my philosophy around how can we provide better service so that people want to continue to refer us. And so in the short term, I think the answer is no. In the long term, I think the answer is yes. I won't see it immediately though on the P&L. She'll definitely be an overhead expense.
How do you grow? Like what paths to growth are you seeing in the fence company?
Oh my gosh. I think the better question is what path to growth do I not see in this?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Industry? We'll lay them all out. Let's do this.
Oh, it is just the demand in Central Ohio for fencing is just insane. It is, you know, before we took over, they were doing a $400 per month Yellow Page ad and that was it. You know, it was all word of mouth, et cetera. When we came on board, we started doing some Google ads. Got rid of the Yellow Page.
Nice.
You know, expense. And it was just, it's overwhelming how much demand there is and how much capacity that we do not have to bid all of it. That was kind of the inside sales hire was to help me bid a lot of the commercial jobs. We are not even proactively, I haven't even gotten to the point where I'm proactively trying to form relationships with contractors yet. And my whole family are contractors. So it's something that I can't wait to do, but I've really wanted to make sure our operations were very streamlined before, you know, I overshot my skis, as they say. An area that I am so excited specifically to grow in our business though, is do-it-yourself or material only sales. So a great example of that is we recently formed a relationship with a union contractor who has to have his own union employees install fences, but they need the material. And that is just so wonderful to take a look at his plans, give him exactly what he needs. It's available for pickup or delivery, and it doesn't involve the crew or any disruption in scheduling. And that's an area that I am just very wildly excited to grow.
Why would they buy it from you versus like nearly anywhere else, like Home Depot?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like why? Why would they do that?
That's a great question. It comes down to, I would say, you know, take this with a grain of salt because this is my sales pitch. I would say it comes down to quality of material. So different gauges of thickness of even chain link. It varies so drastically, the integrity of your fencing material. And I don't care if that's wood, vinyl, aluminum, chain link. I mean, it is going to depend on what are you using this for and how could we supply you with the best case scenario. You know, fencing is a really interesting, it's a really interesting area of construction because seven, you know, eighths of the entire integrity of the fence is below ground. You know, it's what you do not see in terms of the structure. And you only really know 3 to 5 years down the road if you have a solid fence. Is it still perfectly straight? Is your material weathering all four seasons if you're in somewhere like the Midwest? And so, you know, we have 40 years of experience that we're still here. We were, you know, been around for a long time doing the right thing for our customers. And we're not always the cheapest. We're not going to beat a Home Depot pricing. But if you want a fence that looks great 10 to 15 years from now, you're going to invest additionally.
It's a good sales pitch.
That's my spiel.
Yeah. If you were up here, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll buy a fence. All right. So yeah, that's an, so like wholesaling, you're seeing that as a good avenue for growth. All right. I'm into that. Mm-hmm. What are the other avenues you're seeing?
We do about 50-50 commercial and residential. I just love to grow commercial. Commercial is, it just, everybody needs a fence. If you have a commercial building or property or materials you want to keep housed in a protected area.
Can you define what commercial? Commercial is different to everybody. So in your world, what's commercial?
Commercial is any business that has a property or product that they're looking to protect. And it can be schools, it could be colleges, it can be trucking, warehousing, et cetera.
Okay. So apartment buildings, yeah, it does. Apartment buildings, HOAs, that type of thing. Are we considering that commercial or residential?
I would consider that, well, it gets a little tricky. We have a lot of property management companies that we work with, and I would say those are commercial. And they in-house, they enclose rather. We just wrapped up an $80,000 project for a apartment complex over on the east side of Columbus. So, you know, I would consider that commercial. It's not for one single resident, but instead it's a group of companies that own these apartment complexes. So yeah, it's just, it's good. It's a great customer to have.
Yeah. So you really want to grow the commercial. I mean, bigger projects, more hands off, right? Like it sounds pretty attractive. How are you going to do it?
A couple ideas. I have, and none of these are proven because,
okay,
you know, we haven't yet proven them.
That's cool.
But the whole reason that I hired John for the inside sales role was to help us develop, not only to gather plans from other contractors, to help submit proposals, those sorts of things. But I love selling. I love sales. I love contractors. I've been around them my entire life. And our goal is not to go deep with, you know, 20 contractors. I want to pick 5 to 8 contractors who we really cherry pick to say, those types of projects are ones we want to get involved in. We have a great relationship. And it's more than just about the price because we have, you know, I was looking back on some bids we had done in 2021 and they're never going to choose us, even if we were the lowest bidder around because we don't have a great relationship. And so I think it's all about this relationship building and calling on and being eager to have that business supported and having great follow through.
When you're looking for these type of contractors or relationships, would this be new construction? Would this be, I'm trying to imagine how I would go about seeking these folks out.
Yeah. My initial thought is that there's different segments. Like there are, you have schools and colleges is one segment. There's a lot of fencing in high school. You know, high school, colleges, for that sure. sort of thing. It's funny. The more you drive around, the more fencing you see.
I don't want to start looking because then I'll buy a fencing company.
It's wild. Yeah, it's wild. Yeah. And so we have that avenue, but there's also, you know, commercial new builds, new construction, absolutely. But then there's other subcategories like property management and different maintenance teams, real estate equity groups that own a bunch of properties. Like those are people that I really want to form great relationships with as well.
Nice. Sitting here thinking of Peter Lohman.
Yeah. Peter. I had coffee with Peter a couple weeks ago. Yeah. He's a deep critical thinker. I really enjoy our conversations.
Yeah. He's a great guy. Did you close?
Well, I think ongoing. I think he'll reach out to me when he has a need, but yeah.
All right. Cool. Cool. All right. Well, this sounds pretty good. So focus on commercial. We brought on a sales guy. We're going to be focusing on relationships. Yeah, I like all that. What were some of the challenges that you dealt with in the first 90 days?
Oh, my land.
My sister-in-law says that.
I would love to narrow it down to what wasn't a challenge. I mean, I think it was such a stable business, you know, and so we felt really good about the margins. We felt really good about what we were walking into from a cash perspective. You know, the business was stable, it was solid, and they had great people involved. What was interesting about our transition, just to be very frank, is that there was a foreman who was the seller's nephew that was with him for 34 years. This foreman, we kept pushing to have the seller, you know, introduce us to the foreman prior to the close. It happened about 2 weeks before. And I think it's safe to say that the foreman was a bit shocked that the business was being sold. So we walked into a situation that I think was a bit soured before we had a chance to really, you know, get in the door and prove ourselves there.
Did he think he would end up with the business?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Those are tough. I've walked into a few of those and I walk away. Yeah, that's tough. So, okay, keep going.
I guess, keep going. The takeaway is, you know, I should have leaned into that harder and sooner, but you want to be respectful to the seller around their relationships and their dynamic. It was his nephew, for Pete's sake, you know, so there was just a lot of knowledge in this individual, and we were really hoping that it would go smoother than it did. 90 days in, we decided to part ways. I really felt that his leadership style, my leadership style, were just really black and white, totally at odds with one another, honestly. Yeah. And so that was a big challenge. And I felt that I was really making a stand for the type of culture that we wanted in the business, what we were supporting, the behavior that we were rewarding versus the behavior we were not rewarding. And I felt like that was a very big pivotal point in this past 6 to 7 months in terms of what this business was going to stand for moving forward. So that was a big learning.
I mean, a hard one too. Who did I just talk to about this? Oh, Sam Leslie. This was like 2 or 3 episodes ago. It wasn't a nephew, but it was a similar thing. And yeah, the guy was like the license holder for the company. And he made the same decision because there's only one good decision, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you made the right one. But that is a punch in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
How did you replace him?
You know, I don't think we have yet. We had a second foreman in the business who had 10 years experience, and he is just absolutely phenomenal, wonderful guy. We very much align on leadership, the kind of company we want to have. He's stellar, like total stud.
That's awesome.
So he took over more of that role, but we're really having trouble kind of backfilling. I mean, you could argue that this guy was, you know, the guy that we parted ways with was the Kobe Bryant of fencing. I mean, he was fantastic at his craft. He was very skilled. So replacing that has been a huge challenge. And it's something that I thought we could really internally develop somebody, but I think it's going to take a lot longer, many years versus what I originally thought. And so I think we're going to go outside and hire for some leadership additionally, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's a big difficulty. That's tough. I mean, it sounds like you made the right decision.
I feel really good about it. But yeah, I wish him well. I feel really good about our trajectory and the people we have on board and where we're heading. Even if it cost us some production and some skill inside the business, I think it was the right move long term.
Yeah. Have you guys started hunting for this outside hire?
No. It is something that I'm getting ready to do in probably 2 weeks.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So you have a lot of people starting to come on. I assume peak season is like April or like it starts to ramp. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're prepping for like the bulk of your revenue.
Prepping for the ramp. Another fun fact is I'm due with our second child in May.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm trying to get some people in place that I can depend on and feel fully ready to take on the role prior to me taking off for a bit for maternity leave.
Yeah. You've said, this is in line with that. You've said a few times, we, and you mentioned your husband once. Is your husband involved in the company?
Oh, well, he's always involved. He's kept his full-time job. So he helps in the business about one day a week, even if it's weekends kind of thing. But he is, I think you're pretty familiar with EOS terminology.
Yeah.
He's very much the visionary role. I'm very much the implementer.
Okay. That's a good match.
He does, you know, it's, and again, with that fresh perspective, you know, he'll just pop in and say like one pearl of an idea, and it's exactly what we were looking for. So very much my partner in crime, even if he's not in the business full time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the question was, I think you're the first person I've interviewed who is the president of a company about to go on maternity leave. Some version of it. So that wasn't like a who's watching your kid or who's watching the kid. That was just like, when you're not there, who is there?
Oh my gosh. I will tell you, John, this was not our planning. We had tried for 4 years for, you know, we have one son, he's five, but we've tried for 4 years for on a fertility journey that just didn't pan out until now. And, you know, all you have to do is buy a business and
that's it.
The stars aligned.
The stress makes it happen.
So it was not our planning, but all in good timing. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to Mexico next week for our first vacation away from
that's awesome.
The business. But my point in saying that is I feel like I am leaving my baby for the first time. And I am, you know, in terms of getting ready for maternity leave and like being away a year, you know, less than a year from the time we purchased it until, you know, maternity leave. There is a lot of thoughts that I have around what will that feel like to me? And anybody who's a parent knows just how fleeting and how special that newborn time is. And I don't want to rob myself of that personally because I know how special and important that is. And I also want my business to thrive without me. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, a business can really be suffocated if it relies on one person too much. And so I keep using the word with my team of empowering. Like, this is your empowerment, doc, once I'm away in Mexico for 1 week. You know, I think 5 days is going to be so long to be away. But that's something we're working through with our advisor, Simone, and we're actually meeting up with her in Mexico. So we'll be able to talk with her.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. So, you know, poolside, I'll be having a, I don't know, virgin mojito, and she'll be laying it on me around, you know, what we're going to do this next year.
Yeah. At least you have a rough, obviously no one ever knows when the baby will actually come, but at least you have a rough timeline. I'm sort of escaping from my companies this February. We're just working remotely for the whole month of February, but having that timeline was like, oh my God, we have to get all of this done so that I can go do this and not physically be in the office for a month.
Where are you working at?
We're going to Florida. For a month. Yes. Look out.
Awesome. Look out.
Should be fun. We're taking the kids. It'll be a whole thing. But yeah, it was interesting. And having that like rough timeline really helped frame it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure with you is the same thing. You had like an 8 month warning. So that's great. That is interesting though. I think you are the first one that I've ever talked to that had that problem. All right. So you feel like you've got the timeline, you're coming up with a game plan, and you think it's going to be in good hands. This will be cool.
There's only two options, you know, sink or swim. And
yeah, it goes well or it doesn't.
That's right. Yeah. If it starts to sink, I can pop in baby in tow. But, you know, I've got the whole benefit and the whole, I mean, we're just, our team is so special and we have just people with such high values that I fully trust that they would do what they felt was in the best interest of the company. And we've been talking a lot about in our Monday morning meetings, like the identity of who we are as a brand. And so when Cassie's not here, you'll know what call to make because you know the identity that we stand for here at Bowden Fence. And when Josh, the head foreman, is away on vacation, we'll know the call to make because we know what he stands for. And there won't be second guessing specifics. Now, there's always financial ramifications when it, you know, a choice goes doesn't poorly. Go the way, sure. Yeah, the way I intend, but that's learning tax.
That's right. Expensive tuition. Okay. So you bought 7 months ago. Where do you think this thing is going to be in 5 years? What do you see the future of Bowden Fence?
It's fun to have this conversation in January when we've wrapped up the year.
Perfect timing.
I ran through my financials and I feel really good about kind of where we are. One of the things to give you some insight. So we've done as much in revenue. So we did about $750 in revenue in 6 months this year versus what we did in 1 year. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So we are trending in a great direction. We made a ton of investments in the business. So our profit margins are slimmer than the previous owner because we've invested in wages, equipment, you know, some new computers, some new stuff for the business. However, when I look at the 5-year trajectory, my husband always loves to talk about how many crews. And oh, nice. I think there will be a threshold of how many crews are too many, you know, in terms of, do we want to continue to grow or do we really want to maintain at a certain amount? You know, I think that in my mind, 4 to 5 crews is right where I want to be. We have 2 now, hoping to bring a 3rd on in the spring. And we've worked all year round. I mean, today it was 12 degrees when the guys started their day. And I typically don't love for them to work under 20 degrees. And I left it up to our team to decide if they wanted to work today or not. So moral of the story is I think that wintering the full year, I think it'll be feel really good at 4 to 5 crews.
What is revenue of 4 to 5 crews?
It's about $4 million.
Do you think the easiest way to get there is a push towards continued organic growth, or do you think you'll supercharge it with a tuck-in acquisition?
My husband wants to acquire. I want to do organic. So yeah. We will see. We will see. You know, we don't have one of the big holes in our business that we're looking to solve this year is we don't have really formalized training for our crews. And so in order to onboard and retain people and have them feel, again, that word empowered in the field, we really have to have formalized training and we don't have it yet. And so I have a lot of ideas about how that could look, how we could solidify that. But in order to have crews of that magnitude, we really have to have better training. So it's on our radar.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. We found, I mean, it's not like rocket science, but for me, it was like a lightning bolt of a realization. But after I realized it, I was like, yeah, that was pretty obvious. Like the bigger we were able to just invest in different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Duh, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was just like, I'm thinking specifically of this training thing. We came up with all these SOPs when we were smaller. They didn't end with the idea of, okay, we build this, we'll never have to rebuild it. Like the platform's built. And like, mm-hmm. In our case, that wasn't what happened. We ended up having to rebuild a bunch of stuff, but it just got easier the bigger we got. But the growth was chaotic versus
yeah.
A solid push towards organic growth. So it's just whichever one you want to deal with, I guess.
What do you do? I'm curious what you do for training for your techs. Do you guys feel like you have a pretty solid onboarding and training program?
We do. We do now. Didn't when we were your size. And we added a solid one at maybe $3 million.
Okay.
And then
a solid crew or a solid trainer?
Solid. So we added a solid onboarding program with training at $3 million. Cool. We brought in a full-time trainer at $5 million.
Okay.
That's when it got like very good was the full-time person. But obviously that's a huge amount of resources for a small company, a full-time trainer.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, obviously like from an acquisitive background, I might be with your husband on this one. Yeah. But Brandon, my normal co-host, who's like taking a month off right now, he would be on the, let's just push for solid growth.
Uh-huh.
All right.
So. The thing that excites me about acquisition, though, is I think that, you know, we could have a fencing company with a bit of a different geographic footprint that we absorb into our company. Like, that would be exciting to me. We're very outside of a geographic footprint.
Yeah, same trade, but like 45 minutes away. So got us into a totally new market. It was a really big deal for us. I mean, it was a springboard.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be really exciting for me. And I could get behind that. So.
Okay. So what would a new market be?
You know, Columbus is so interesting because we're just south of downtown. So there is so much growth, both north, so headed your way, as well as west of us. And so it's booming. You cannot go wrong in terms of where, you know, where Columbus is growing at such a rapid pace. So it would just need to be kind of outside of the 270 outer belt or our outer belt rather. So yeah.
How do you market a fence company?
You know, right now it's interesting because one of the things I'm just wildly, relentlessly focused on are reviews, Google reviews, focus there. For a visual stimulation, because there's so much visualization specifically for residential, I'm using Instagram, Facebook to highlight a lot of our work, that sort of thing. but it's all ran by me. So it's, you know, don't look with a critical eye. And it's been so low-hanging fruit right now that I'm just, you know, we're investing in a new website right now. And I'm excited about some digital marketing options when, you know, you search for fencing Columbus, Ohio. That'll be a no-brainer to be that top of funnel search. But we have not had any issues with inbound calls or inbound requests as of yet. So it hasn't really been a sole focus for me at the present time, besides solidifying our brand, getting reviews online, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't think he did fencing, but he did like other exterior roofs, siding, windows. And Facebook was a phenomenal growth engine for him. It was incredible.
For organic or paid?
Mainly organic. So he went about, he had 6,000, I don't know if they call it followers or what they call it on Facebook, but he had 6,000 people that looked at whatever he was doing. And he was able to produce a few million dollars off of that alone. Obviously good reputation and there was other stuff on top of that. But that is the exterior side of advertising on Facebook was crazy.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that as a plumber. Like, what would I do?
Right.
Toilets or something? Like, no, nobody wants to see that. But it was cool. It was really cool.
I was really, my ears perked when your former guest, the gentleman from Squeegee Gods.
Yeah, Johnny.
Was talking about Yelp because, you know, that was really fascinating. And Yelp is definitely, I think it's a third to fourth tier of something I would focus on from a, you know, social platform here in Ohio, but I believe he was based in California.
Right.
So anyways, so yeah, I'm always, you know, for my digital marketing days, I'm definitely going back to what was effective. And, you know, it draws such a residential crowd though. So I do want to be mindful of who I'm targeting. But, you know, and I would push back in my digital marketing days and say, but commercial and residential searchers have habits that mimic one another. So even if I'm a commercial person looking for fencing in Columbus, Ohio, I'm going to react similarly. I'm going to look for social proof. I'm going to see whose website is easy to navigate, clean. I can get in touch with somebody, et cetera. What I'm more excited about from a digital marketing perspective are actually careers and recruiting. You know, right now for blue collar labor, we've advertised on Indeed, and that's been our main channel of funneling in candidates. I had tried Facebook and I had tried also Craigslist. It was a dismal failure. So I'm really looking to have a careers page and hopefully that will start to funnel in some folks as well.
Yeah. I meant to ask this earlier. Instead, I got really interested in the advisor portion. But people that have backgrounds in, I just talked to somebody else about, Mills, whose episode comes out tomorrow. I find it really interesting when people have like a big picture view into a ton of different industries. So Mills was on the sell side of companies. So that meant he got to like basically look at the books of hundreds of companies on the way out the door. And I'm like, so why did you pick the one you did? Right. And it's not good or bad. I just want to know why. Okay. So for same question, like you got to be a part of the marketing for a ton of local companies and you picked fencing. Like walk us through that one.
I have such a nostalgia for anything construction because my family, I come from a family of contractors, electricians, et cetera.
So you feel predisposed to some construction.
Very much so.
Okay.
Very much so. I feel very comfortable in that lane. But it was really influenced by, oh my gosh, I forget his name. Nick
Huber.
Yes, thank you. It was a podcast on Sweaty Startup about, you know, these generations of older service-based businesses that really lack systems, efficiencies, et cetera. And it got me thinking. It was sent to me by my friend, Patrick Dichter, who I think you also know.
I actually think Patrick's about to support the pod. Thanks, Pat.
Oh, yes. Yes, he told me. And he just had his acquisition. He's six days into his
and he's coming on
acquisition.
For that, too. That's going to be cool.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. He's a phenomenal person. One of my best friends, just great, great guy all around. However, so listen to the podcast and really the business was for sale on Buy Sell Biz, you know, just found the online listing and we weren't actively pursuing buying a business. I mean, it was something that we had toyed around with, talking about. You know, I shared the episode with my husband. It was something that we talked about, you know, maybe one day kind of thing. Met with the owner. Basically dragged my husband to this meeting. He was like, we're not buying a business, like move on, you know? And I drug him to the meeting and we left that meeting, that first meeting with the seller. And he said, we're buying a business. You know, we were so enthralled by the seller's character and really what he stood for and his relentless pursuit to quality. We felt we really found something special. And so it was the first and only business we've ever looked at. Is the one that we purchased, which is okay, that's not cool. Something I'd also recommend, but
yeah, still, I mean, it worked out. That's cool. I heard somebody else did that once with a sidewalk company. They were like, yeah, I think we're going to buy a business. They got on BizBuySell. They only looked at one and then they closed a few months later. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So it was, you were predisposed to construction. This one just sort of appealed to you a little bit. You met the seller, you fell in love with it. I can totally.
Yeah, I should also. The business was sleepy. You know, we walked in, and if the place went up in flames, there was no electronic record of any customer jobs that were happening down the pipeline. I mean, it was
a nightmare that I have. I've had that nightmare before.
Oh my gosh! It's literally
we have a
you
deal.
Know,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say it was just something where you thought this should be systemized somewhere else other than your card table.
Digitally.
Yes.
Yeah. We have a deal that is like that right now. And I'm still up in the air if I want to do it just because I don't want to deal with the digitization process. It'd be a great opportunity for somebody that has more energy than I do. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Were you doing any marketing for, I know you were leading the sales team, but like, were you overseeing any fencing companies? Did you have a general idea of cost per lead or any of those metrics?
No, back to your original question around, so digital marketing, I worked all with small businesses, no doubt. I think my confidence grew in consulting because while I was hiring a lot of these former entrepreneurs, I was hearing their stories and their stories were just inspiring, you know, and it felt like just the ways that they overcame, the way that they grew their businesses. And it was, you know, industry agnostic. So it's from all different types of industries, but very much, you know, risk tolerant, you know, and it was just so inspiring. And, you know, one of the things that it kind of felt like I was on the bench watching an amazing game and not being part of it is how I felt, you know, when
I hear attorneys say that when they go from sell side attorneys to buying something, they're like, I'm on the wrong side of the table.
Yeah. And it felt like just an exciting opportunity where I really got to exercise my talents. And I had this really interesting conversation with my brother when we were purchasing it, because my family was like, what the heck are you doing? This sounds like a terrible idea. And he was like, do you not feel successful? And I said, well, success to me is really continuing to learn, continuing to adapt and hone my skills. Like that is what success means to me. I was eager to kind of take that next leap. So
yeah,
a leap it has been.
Yeah, sounds like it. What branch of construction, you keep saying you've come from construction, like what types of construction?
So my mom she's the head buyer. She leads a team for buying and acquiring materials for the largest contractor in Ohio. They're called Kokozi Construction, based out of my hometown. My dad is a general contractor in Columbus. He leads a company and has been president of company in Mansfield, as well as Columbus as well. My brothers are electricians and my stepdad owns his own excavating business.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Covering the gamut.
A lot of variety there. That's pretty cool. I want to go back to the I'm going to buy a business thing. I don't think we talk about that very much on this show because usually I just forget to ask, I guess. Like, so the original deciding factor, I mean, you were obviously thinking about it in some way before you got on BizBuySell, there was a moment. So
yeah,
what was that moment and why did you end up being the one to run it?
Yeah.
Like my wife and I, we buy businesses, but that's what we do professionally. So yeah. I don't know if one of us had like a job, like, do you flip a coin for who runs it? Like as a couple partnership, how do you make that choice?
I think I had a real crisis of meaning to get really personal. You know, I told you we had a fertility journey. I had suffered a miscarriage, and I just looked at myself in the mirror, and, you know, we have a beautiful 5-year-old, and I'm very fortunate for him, of course, but I just had this moment of, what does my life mean? And where are my talents best suited? And I always think about the way he views me through his lens. You know, what do my actions say? What does my calendar and pocketbook stand for? Like where is my time best allocated? What is he observing through my actions? And I had a very big crisis of meaning around, where are my talents best utilized? And it felt like all of a sudden my 9-to-5 just wasn't enough. And it felt just like this angst within me. And so when I stumbled upon Buy Sell Biz, Ross and I, that's my husband, we weren't at the same place, you know, mentally around the investment or the time commitment around something like this. But as we grew in the journey and, you know, our acquisition took about 8 months. It just felt like we came line in step with one another, and we eventually got to the same place. The idea of me taking over the business and him not came from solely an income perspective. So there was definitely enough meat on the bone for us both to jump into the business. We didn't want that. I wanted an opportunity where I didn't need to take an income from the business and continually to reinvest in it and rely on his income to support our family. And yeah, you know, I think he has big dreams of his own around whether it be further acquisitions and maybe joining me one day versus construction development. He's very talented at construction development, and that's what his 9-to-5 is right now. But yeah, we'll see kind of where it goes. I love working with him in the business. He's an absolute yin to my yang. He compliments me, and I think vice versa. So I'd love to work with him side by side when that day might come.
That was a great answer. I talked to Trish Higgins from Chenmark. It had to be like 6 months ago. I think she's running the ferry company, but are you familiar with their model?
Yeah, I'm very inspired by her.
Yeah, I mean, she's amazing. But I think they have 3 to 7 companies somewhere there. It's a big range. I totally get that. But I always found you're going to go run this one to her husband. I'm going to go run this one. And we've had a few other people on who are like, I mean, my wife and I work together, but it's a little bit of a different thing. And it's just always interesting to me how it works. Combining marriage and business is a fascinating journey.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you either can really do it as a partnership, or you find, hey, I need my own areas to operate. And I think either way is a great way. When I listen to Trish. When I listen to her, and I think at the time they had 7 businesses under her belt, I'm like, you don't sound tired on this podcast, and I need you to sound tired.
Yeah.
But she was very polished and really inspired by their journey.
Yeah, she's a firecracker. Okay, so you've had a crazy first 7 months. You really dipped the toe, and you're really like a year and a half in with sort of deciding due diligence, all of that. What was the longest part of due diligence? 8 months is average, so I'm not surprised by the length of closing, I guess. But what was the longest part of due diligence for you guys?
We ran into a big snag in our lending process because the land appraised about $200,000 less than what we were willing to pay for it.
Oh, so you bought the real estate with the business.
That's right. Yes. 2 acres of real estate we sit on. There's an office building plus 2 pool barns and a pretty big, supply yard. So the land appraisal really threw a wrench into our deal. So that was probably the most challenging part of our due diligence.
Who gave?
We had to come up with a creative solution.
Nice answer.
And I'm still afraid of our SBA lender knowing what that creative solution is. So I won't say it on air.
Got it.
But but it was a creative solution. So
yeah, That is a lot of land.
It is a lot of land.
I mean, do you feel like it was 2 acres, 2 buildings, and like an office. That's a lot. That feels like you could really stay there for a very long time. And I'm sure you've already thought through that. I'm just like catching up to you here 7 months later.
I feel like we are outgrowing it very
already.
Rapidly.
Oh my God. Wow.
Because we have
2 acres sounds huge.
I know, it really does. We have 4 trucks, 2 buildings, a welding area, all of our supplies. We have a whole wood shed that's filled with stock lumber. It's quickly becoming very small. I'd actually like to purchase a side lot to us there's either way we could go, but we're next to a residential side yard, as well as a commercial lot. And I'm just itching to kind of expand or buy one of their lots as well.
Is moving in the cards if you can't buy one of those?
It could be. Wouldn't rule it out. I think we sit at such a centrally located area in Columbus that we can easily access almost any highway. I think it would be doing us a disservice to move. But to your point about an acquisition, that could solve some of that. But I think we have some interested parties next to us. So I think in the next handful of years, it'll be an opportunity to purchase it.
Yeah. Man, 2 acres just sounds like a lot. But you must have to keep, I think we talked about this a few months ago, you keep a ton of inventory right now.
The former seller kept a ton of inventory in their yard at any given time, specifically chain link. About 50% of all of our jobs is chain link. About 46% of our entire job for 2021 was a chain link commercial job. What's interesting about inventory is we don't have an inventory tracking system yet. It's a huge blind spot in our business. You and I have chatted about this. It's something we're getting ready to tackle this month. In fact, around inventory management and how that looks, et cetera. So we've got some work to do. How will it look, or how does it look right now?
How will it look?
So I'm borrowing some ideas where the company you referred to me out of Vancouver, I had a demo with them. They're awesome. I can't wait to get to that company. And I forget the name, Tofino.
Yeah.
They're amazing. I really love their barcoding system and having somebody full-time kind of manage that. In terms of baby stepping into a system and solution like that, I borrowed some ideas from another fencing contractor out of Dayton and the way that they do it. And I think it's going to work for now. It's mostly on Google Sheets and, you know, has kind of a count per week of our major assets to see what came in, what came out kind of thing. We just got a staging area. So all of our jaw, I mean, it's just huge. We didn't have a staging area. So guys are hunting, you know, 30 to 45 minutes every morning for their job
site
materials before.
That's huge.
It's painful. It's just so painful to even say that out loud that has been happening, but it has.
I mean, I think it's cool that it's fun that there's like changes that you can make that have that kind of difference, right? You set aside a small piece of land and you just saved hours a day.
Oh cool. My gosh. And I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm jumping for joy over that. It's a huge win. So yeah, we're trying to get our inventory ducks in a row so that we have a better pulse on what we're shy on.
Yeah. And can you remind me, as in tell our audience, why do you keep so much inventory?
For him, he was very debt averse. So he was just bankrolling inventory. And his feeling was that every December, a lot of our vendors will give major discounts. And so he would do this huge bulk purchase in December and, you know, obviously avoid some taxes there as well in order to save himself. And that was his strategy.
Did you guys do the same thing in December?
We did not. We made a bit of a modest investment in some fittings because word on the street is that it's going to be hard to get our hands on them in a bit due to supply chain issues. So we wanted to stock up on the things we thought that we needed to get us by, but not to the extent that he did. I mean, he would do 100,000 in inventory in December. So we did like 10.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. That is a lot of inventory. But I mean, the projects are probably absolutely gigantic. I'm trying to think of like a university or something. You land one big project and you use thousands of feet of fence. And I'm sure it goes pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. That's interesting. We're getting used to our first inventory heavy business right now. We took over an electrical company and they're not inventory heavy. They're just inventory heavier than we're used to. Mm-hmm. And they have to be because when they go to a project, you know, they're laying tens of thousands of feet of wire where we're just not used to doing that scope of a work. So as we're learning buying in this business, it's like, why do we need this much? And then they're like, that's going to last us 4 days. Okay. Wow. That's insane.
Yeah.
You guys are churning. All right, cool. This was a great dive into the fencing business. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I would want to know about fencing before I go buy one. I feel like we covered the gambit. Do you have any
highly recommended?
Highly recommended. That's right. Cassie recommended. All right. Cassie, do you have any closing thoughts for us?
If you want to steer me toward an area, I probably might, but no, you know, I think last year we really focused on culture as a business. And this year we're really excited about systemizing some of our sales and front end stuff and increased communication with our field from our estimating team, which is lots to be desired there in terms of communication. So we're gearing up for a great year ahead, but yeah.
That sounds awesome. Well, thank you for coming on. If people want to keep in touch with you, how can they do that?
I think I'm Cassie Niekamp on Twitter. I should double check that. I'm also Cassie at boundandfence.com. So shoot me a note. I'm probably respond there a bit quicker than Twitter, but would love to. I know you have a heavy Twitter audience and I need to get hip with it on Twitter, but
yeah, hip with it specifically. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your journey over the past 7 months. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much, John.